You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Are you just going to stand there eating that sushi all night? You haven't even looked at my photorealistic macaroni sculpture.
It's Who Arted with Creative Messiah, Amy Ralphini.
How are you, Amy?
Hey, good morning again.
It's very, very good morning. Is it still raining outside?
It's raining and pouring. It's miserable and freezing
terrible.
Cold. I'm pleased, though, because I'm going to Dunedin today.
And right.
This cold weather is like, get ready.
Yeah.
So now I know.
Prepare.
Yeah.
Awesome. So today on Who Arted, we are chatting with artist Joyce Campbell. How are you doing?
Hey.
Awesome. And you're currently showing, I can't quite pronounce your show title. How do you say it? Is it... Subtilist. And it's currently on...
Subtilist.
Currently showing at Two Rooms, and it's one of the four finalists in the Walters Prize, which is pretty, pretty cool.
Not the same work, but the same artist.
Same artist,
which
right.
Which is exciting, and that gala is happening later this month, and I am actually going.
Oh, hey.
Well, so I will be seeing you there.
Wicked.
Yeah. Anyway, right, so... Joyce's show, currently on at Two Rooms, consists of a body of work produced in the late 1990s. The works intersect creative practice and science in both the way we look at it and how they were made. Feeding agar on a glass plate with strains of bacteria or wild fungi, Joyce grew Bactam Stories, which she immortalized by using the plate as a negative to print to chromacome paper, placed beneath the glass plate and enlarger. Visually, the works themselves have a soft, translucent depth one would expect of a magnified portion for film, if film was printed to paper. Gentle veins of shadows curl and stretch over the surface, accompanied by soft sepia orbs, like the kind one may see doppling an old book. On first glance, the nostalgic colour palette and shapes therein evoke the same feeling one may have if one, I don't know why I wrote one all through this, if one came across an old petticoat covered in blood stains, lace and faded blood, that's just me though. So that's what your work is kind of looking like up at Two Rooms at the moment. Talking a little bit around how you produced that, when you did it, dealing with agar and the way that you worked, did you, these are a little bit strange, but... Did the works produce a smell, and do you recall a smell? And it does seem like potentially the only thing missing from this memory of sorts.
Absolutely, the work produces a smell. The title is Subtilis. That's a shortening, really, of Bacillus subtilis, which is the bacteria that's producing the kind of scrolled, almost sort of gothic patterns that you're describing as lace-like. So some of the works are bacterial and some of them are fungal. They're all one-to-one scale. There's no enlargement involved in the pieces that are actually... in this exhibition, although in some cases I did place bacterial slides within an enlarger to make a projected photogram. But in this case, there's no enlargement at all. And what I was doing was working either with soil-borne bacteria or with plant-borne fungi. I worked quite a lot with my cousin, who was a PhD student at Auckland University at the time, and so I was working up in their doctoral labs, kind of developing a protocol around isolating really interesting organisms. And my favourite organism...
I know, I'm so fascinated that you have a favourite bacteria, and that freaks me out as well.
It's Bacillus subtilis. It's a really interesting bacteria for all sorts of reasons, but I was recommended to use it because it has a beautiful form, and it has that form because as a cell, it has a little spiralling tail, and it extends its cellular form or contracts it depending on the substrate that it moves through. So it's a really interesting bacteria for all sorts of reasons. It's used a lot in testing genetic engineering methodologies as well, for various reasons I can go into later, but it has this very distinctive smell.
Ooh.
And when I was working in this lab, I was working with a bunch of other, with doctoral students around me, and they would whiff their agar plates with a real satisfaction when they were working with their personal, you know, bacteria that they specialised in. And I developed that relationship to Bacillus subtilis. I can smell it. I can smell it a mile off. And,
wow.
And I'm fond of it.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, that's kind of gross because... those can be dangerous, some of those bacteria. But I guess if you're actually doing it in a controlled environment like that, you know that you're not going to be poisoned.
Well, some can be dangerous, but I worked with Bacillus subtilis because it's benign. So I knew that it wasn't dangerous, and I was working with doctoral students who could, and in fact their lab manager who
so you did it the safe way.
Yeah.
You weren't like some crazy mad scientist in Elam, like mixing unknown substances.
Yeah.
And then running away from your studio going, I can't go back, it's poisonous.
There was a lot more that with the fungi, and I really was working with wild strains that nobody could identify, and there I was looking for really rich colours,
yeah, right?
Because you want this kind of seeping colour, yeah, that kind of infects the agar,
yeah.
And so in some of those images you can see a kind of blood red, which you just referred to,
yeah,
kind of seeping out into the agar. So I was looking for those pigments, and the reason that I worked with plant-based pathogens, with sick-looking plants, I'd go around looking for fungally infected plants, is because they produce those pigments in order to deflect UV rays, essentially, in order to survive a really harsh ultraviolet environment.
Oh.
And so they produce those pigments as a protective mechanism. So if you get your fungi off plants which are exposed to a lot of UV light,
yeah,
they're more likely to have those interesting pigments. Whereas if you get your bacteria from the ground, they're,
yeah,
more likely to have that interesting structure because they're kind of compelled to swim through soil.
Yeah.
If you get it from water, they're not interesting at all.
Oh, interesting.
That's self-propagating. It doesn't create an interesting form.
It's so fascinating and exciting, all of this.
I got quite into it.
I can completely imagine and understand that. So we've got the smell, but how long, just around, so you did it from the department in the university, but how long did each piece take to kind of grow, and how were you projecting them? Were you actually doing, did you take them back, the plates back to a dark room to project them on the paper, or
I grew them in site, and I was working both at Elam and also at UCSD in California when I was doing part of my master's there. So the pieces that you're seeing here, I produced them for the Biennale of Sydney in 1998, and I was actually living in the States when I made these works. And I would have to produce them in a room on site, and I couldn't flip them over or in any way move them, so I had to produce a kind of almost like a table with a mirror structure underneath it so that I could project filtered light through and up through into the plate and place the paper over the top of it. It was kind of an invention.
Okay, that's how you did it.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Because they're really fragile. I mean, they're incredibly fragile. And you can see all the little cracks and smushes and kind of, you know, where things are creeping over the edges. And really, I was interested in that really material aspect of photography, where the plate gave way and you could feel its limits. You could feel the limits of what a negative might be.
Yeah, you can see that in the work as well. It does have that depth of film and light that you kind of get with working in that way in a dark.
Well, you can only get that kind of depth with a photogram, with a contact print, because you don't have any grain. And these prints are the size of a door. They're probably about 1.6, 1.7 metres high. The plates were that big, so you can imagine I couldn't move them anywhere. They're really large.
Yeah.
And they're really thin. They're only, you know, the agar itself is only about 3 millimetres deep, and it's like jelly. It's like gelatin that you would, you know.
Did you ever eat any of your own artworks after you'd used them?
No, but I did get some of my fungi from pots of food I'd forgotten to throw out.
Yeah, a bit of that.
But no, it didn't go in the other direction. I certainly wouldn't consume it. It would be dangerous, actually.
Yeah. Excuse me. We're going digital today, and just need to log back into my iPad. Kyberchrome paper was discontinued.
Cibachrome.
Is that the one? Is that the one that's got quite a sort of metallic depth to it?
There's a new version that's quite metallic. It's not Cibachrome. It's a light-based paper, but Cibachrome was what you used to print your slides onto. It's a really, really beautiful kind of paper, and it did have that really, really rich, high gloss, high colour.
Yeah.
And I had to use that because I was working with such delicate you could call them negatives or transparencies, yeah. And it's a positive to positive process, right? So you would take a slide and you can produce it to positive.
Yeah.
We don't use it anymore because now we scan high quality slides, and then at that point you can develop them on negative based paper. So it was a really, really high quality, but it had extremely high contrast. It was used a lot in advertising,
yeah.
And I needed that contrast to work with this really delicate material in a photogram.
I really love that. It's a paper. It's discontinued in 2011, I read online.
But heartbreaking, isn't it? But
hey. Yeah. Well, there might be like 4 or 5 people worldwide that may still have the chemicals or something.
I think I might need to eBay that at some point.
So, therefore, your exhibition at Two Rooms, obviously very limited.
Yeah.
Availability.
Yeah, this is just the work that there is in the world. Yeah, for me. Yeah, I mean, yeah, definitely. And each image is unique.
Yeah.
So, Yeah, they are more like... They're more like kind of automatist paintings at some level than photographs in that way.
Yep.
You can't work in that way again, and they're really large, so they were pretty challenging to make. They required a really specific kind of environment. Obviously, I needed like a room that I could take over, and really large machines that no longer exist because, you know, they're very big. It used to be a commercial procedure, and now it only exists really as a sort of, you know, hand roll if you can get the chemistry kind of, you know, little mini 8x10s or something.
I would love to have a look at your studio and see all the little bits and pieces you have stashed. Well done on storing them beautifully as well, because it's been quite a while.
I was quite surprised they came out looking so clean, but my studio is I'm a bit of a hoarder, bit of a gear hoarder. quite a lot of arcane stuff.
Yeah, oh, I think a lot of artists are like that. So before we wrap up today, the Walters Prize, which is being announced later this month, your video work, Flight Dream, displays soft curling smoke like gas on huge screens. It's very immersive and seems to potentially wrap itself around the viewer. I can see the relationship here with your earlier work. Can you tell us a bit about the process involved in making that work?
Yeah, well, this is the first time I've really worked digitally. So a lot of my photography plays with materiality, and so the actual materials of photography and lenses and all the rest of it have been really important. But in this case, I'm working with a process I've been playing around with for many years, colloidal silver dropping into suspension within a tank of water. And so it's a very dynamic, beautiful, sensuous kind of process. And I've been working with HD, you know, SLRs, basically,
yeah.
Just with Mechanon at home, but in a water tank. And it has a sort of, again, an automatist quality. It produces itself. I never know what it's going to do. I'm sort of capturing what's happening in real time.
Wow.
So produced in a very, very different way. But in this case, working digitally was really important because you have this really, really direct relationship with the images it's made. You can see it being made in real time, and you can shift focus, and you can pan and respond in real time.
It's
in
like
relation
a conversation and a dance with the work as it happens. It's beautiful.
It's really fun. It's really fun to do, you know, to actually be filming it, because it's a very sort of exquisite material, the actual process itself to watch. So you're sort of in this really active physical engagement with it. Yeah.
Are you still doing more of those colloidal silver works?
Well, right now I'm really having fun making silver objects, so that was a part of the work. Essentially, I constructed all the objects. My background's actually in sculpture, not photography academically, and so it was kind of going back to that and having a lot of fun casting, a lot of fun soldering, and kind of building silver objects in order to have almost like a cast of characters to move through the science fiction narrative that I was kind of playing with and riffing off in this case. So I can see myself working in that way again, but I must say my whole practice generally tends to be driven by sort of experimental relationships to materials, so it's quite likely that I will not tire of this so much as move on to another kind of medium relationship very soon.
Oh, sounds awesome, and I look forward to seeing what you come up with. Well, that's all we have time for.
Wicked, yeah. So if you guys want to check out Joyce's exhibition, it's on until the 17th of September. Head along to Two Rooms, which is on 16 Putiki Street in Newton, or go to their website, which is tworooms.co.nz. Thank you for coming along.
Or pop down to the Auckland City Art Gallery. It's the Walters Prize stuff's on there as well.
Awesome.
Thank you.
No worries. Thank you guys.
Ooh, I like this.
Tray chic.
portray cool.
Touché.
Chin chin.
That was Who Arted with Amy Ralphini.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.